Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia, Solartopia, Solartopia. Don't you know we're gonna have a Solartopia all over God's
name? Indeed, we're having a Solartopia. I just ran uptown from a major press event we had downtown here in New York City on the, I'm not in the shape I used to be. Sorry, folks, but I'll be back to fighting shape in the short period of time. We are here live with the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. We're going to be talking about election theft. My co-conspirator, Bob Fetrakis, is just entering the studio, and we are going to be talking for two straight hours about the theft, the potential theft of the 2012 election. And we're also joined by Lori Grace. And we will be joined very shortly in the studio by Mark Crispin Miller here at the Gary Null Studios on Broadway in New York City. We just had a press event in downtown New York about the potential for the theft of the 2012 election. And the number one, the top breaking news on all this is the fact that Mitt Romney, you know, it's hard to say this. It's surreal in this day and age to think that a candidate for the presidency of the United States in 2012, after all we saw in Florida 2000 and in Ohio 2004, could run with a straight face for the presidency of the United States while being an owner, a direct investor in the voting machines that are going to determine the election in Columbus, Ohio, in Cincinnati, Ohio. Bob Fetrakis, the publisher of the Columbus Free Press, attorney in the Brown and the King Lincoln Bronzeville lawsuit, federal lawsuit. We'll have time to talk about that. Tell us exactly, what do you think about this reality on the stories that you and I and Gary Bell broke, and it came out of the Nation magazine as well, about Mitt Romney's ownership of the Hart Inner Civic voting machine company. Is this like just a sideshow, or is it of major significance?
Well, you know, it really shows this bizarre trend to privatize everything in the United States. And I mean, the most shocking thing, Harvey, is I can't find any laws that he actually violated. I mean, obviously it's the massive appearance of impropriety, but apparently Solomare, the private Romney sort of slush fund banking investment apparatus, has invested in Higg Capital, which bought a voting machine company, which is counting 18 million votes in the United States, 7.8 million through direct recorded electronic votes, or what we call the e-voting machines. And again, they're counting the key swing state of Ohio, specifically Hamilton County, this key swing county, which is Cincinnati. So it should obviously be illegal in a democracy to run for president and own a vote counting company.
Why? I mean, come on, Bob. You're for the free enterprise system, for God's sakes. We're also joined here by Lori Grace. Lori, introduce yourself, if you would. Tell us what your affiliation is, and we're going to jump back on these Hart Inner Civic machines.
But I've been involved in...
I'm sure all our listeners are really wanting to know who this beautiful woman is in our studio, and so we can't leave you go unannounced. So go ahead, please.
Well, I've been involved with election integrity issues since 2003 and started connecting with you in 2004. And worked, and now currently I'm the founder and executive director of the Institute for American Democracy and Election Integrity. That's under democracyandelectionintegrity.org, and promoting an open source way of counting votes,
which is basically hand counted paper ballots, and a system in Northern California, being used in Northern California, which is called
mm-hmm.
the
The Trachtenberg election verification
system. Okay, so we will talk about that, and we will get to that. And we've got 2 full hours here to devote to nothing but election protection all the time. So,
and I think at 3:30, Craig Unger will call in.
He will.
New book out, Boss Robe, has a whole chapter on Ohio 2004 and the outsourcing of the votes to Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Right, and we'll also be joined in the studio here by Mark Crispin Miller, who's going to talk about his extensive research on election protection. And Derek Jeter is going to join us to talk about his broken ankle and why he couldn't play for the Yankees.
And why he wants to play for the Detroit Tigers.
Yeah, Bob being from Detroit. So, Bob, let's return to Hart Inner Civic. Now, Hart Inner Civic controls the electronic voting machines in Hamilton County, which is Cincinnati, Ohio, which by anyone who's looking at this election will tell you is probably going to be pivotal one way or the other, although the whole narrative that's coming out of the major corporate media, of course, is that all eyes will be on Hamilton County, and magically at between midnight and 2 a.m, the electronic voting machines will deliver the election to Mitt Romney. But can you tell us where else? Well, first of all, give us a history of Hart Inner Civic and how wonderfully their voting machines actually operate.
Well, if you Googled Hart Inner Civic, I think it's safe to say that our phrase in the original article that appeared on freepress.org was that it had a Google choking record of glitches. When you Google, all you get is like 10,000 voters disappeared at some jurisdiction in Texas. They froze up here. They failed there. They counted the vote wrong. So it's, it's one of the, and in the Everest study in Ohio, they were particularly singled out as sort of the worst of the worst in terms of the machine. Then, Lori can tell you because she discovered this, is not only are they counting all of Texas, Hawaii and a few key parts of Ohio and Oklahoma, but they're counting Orange County, right? As Orange goes, San Mateo. No, in California, they're counting Orange County, which would be key. It's, if you wanted to hive off a few votes there.
So actually, they actually have about 7 counties and the
Orange, in California
and Orange County and San Mateo County actually use paperless voting machines. 50% of them use paperless voting machines in San Mateo.
Are you opposed to push and pray voting? Faith-based? Have you no faith?
One thing is, of course,
and I would like to say one thing, this is important to me, is because I really care about this historic proposition in California called Proposition 37 to label genetically modified foods. And I discovered Romney has a 30-year relationship with Monsanto and actually helped Monsanto after its severe problems with PCBs in Anniston, Alabama, to revise itself into an agritech business or biotech business. And in Orange County, all the paperless voting machines are run by Hart Inter Civic.
So are you opposed to genetically modified voting? I mean, that's what we have here, right? Mutant voting. We have a mutant democratic system.
Votenstein!
We have a proposition that is profoundly grassroots. It's so inspiring to be involved with it. And I feel a lot of pain about the possibility that a corporation...
Okay, go ahead.
That a corporation could also do this. When Monsanto has offered death threats to a single mother Argentinian who sued Monsanto for the birth defects in her town, I think stealing an election is not too difficult.
Well, here, before Lori, thank you for that. And without further ado, I want to bring in another Californian. He's on the telephone. Brad Freeman, are you there?
Yeah, I am. Sorry about that.
Mr. Bradbaugh.
I was on earlier, but I got dumped.
Okay, we're having an all-star show here of people who are working on election protection. So you are a Californian. And do you think it's conceivable? I know it's just hard to believe in this day and age that Monsanto might want to steal the outcome of the proposition to ban. Well, what, they want to. Lori Grace here, one of the founders or pushers of it, they want to force the labeling of genetically modified food, right? Lori, is that the basis of the proposition?
They would like to have no labeling.
Monsanto is against it, but the proposition you're pushing, which is proposition number what?
37.
So you want full transparency in food, right?
Yes.
Well, that's
just what
that's,
next voting.
I like
America,
people to
communist?
Know what they're eating.
What next? Full transparency in voting, Lori?
Yeah, really. So, Brad of Bradlog, do you think it is conceivable that Monsanto? You know, nobody's paying attention to California in terms of the presidential election. Everybody knows that California. Will
I
vote,
am.
Will vote for. Well, are you? Is there a question that California will go for Barack Obama and might not go?
Listen, and we've talked about this before on this show maybe a month or so ago when I was on with both you and Bob. You know, Lori's concerns about Monsanto, anybody's here, Bob's concerns about Mitt Romney. Look, we have obviously a long history of election fraud in this country. People are now willing to spend millions, if not billions, you know, to win these things because, frankly, millions and billions and sometimes even trillions are on the line. So to suggest that, you know, any corporation or any person wouldn't go to any means, and by the way, this is any party, you know, wouldn't go to any means to try to win an election, even through nefarious means, is incredibly naive. You know, that said, I've been noticing it's been interesting over the past 24 hours or so. I, as well as Bob and Harvey, by the way, have been tagged as conspiracy theorists on this. No pun intended when I say tagged, but
all right, tag. You got to explain that. Tag is the name of Mitt Romney's son, right?
That's right.
That he had illegitimately with Sarah Palin, by the way. I mean, nobody's covered that either, right? Now, Mitt Romney, Sarah Palin is actually the mother of Tag Romney. No, I'm kidding. Sorry,
not that we know
resist.
Of. But,
no, but
speaking of conspiracy theories,
okay.
But yes, so he is the son of Mitt Romney and. An investment group that he formed with his dad's money and his dad's business partners
called Solomir
are invested in a group called HIG Capital, which, by the way, appears to stand for Heart Intercivic Group, that is invested in that actually has acquired Heart Intercivic, the
That's
third
right.
largest voting
yes.
machine company.
We've been talking about that. And are there Heart Intercivic machines at work in California? Yes, in Orange County, California, which is huge, right?
And
that's
San
correct.
And
San Mateo, and where
it's the only that's the only actually yeah. Now, along with San Mateo, those are the only two counties that have been allowed to use 100% unverifiable touchscreen voting systems in California since Secretary of State Deborah Bowen's top to bottom review out here decertified all of the other ones. It's not entirely clear to me why she did not decertify Heart Intercivic, although, you know, given that I've talked to scientists who worked on that study, said that Heart Intercivic systems are as bad or worse than all of the other ones that she did decertify.
Similar to the Everest study.
What's that?
I heard that she had run out of money. Oh.
No, but it's similar to the conclusions in Ohio in the Everest study. Usually the worst of the worst is Heart Intercivic.
Well, that's right. And that's what I've heard from, you know, computer scientists who've actually looked at these things. And I stress computer scientists because, interestingly enough, the very same people that are accusing me and Bob of being conspiracy theorists are probably, you know, by basing our work on scientists, are probably the same sort of folks who criticize the folks on the right for ignoring the scientists when it comes to things like global warming.
Right. We have to emphasize here, we are conspiracy theorists because there are conspiracies. Just because you're a conspiracy theorist doesn't mean there's not a conspiracy. We are joined, by the way, very quickly.
Hold on one sec,
Bob. I don't want to be rude here. We are joined by another all-star in the voting and election protection world. Mark Crispin Miller has joined us in the studio, author of a number of great books and a very important Harper's Magazine article way back when exposing much of what happened in Ohio in 2004. So we now have Bob Fitrakis, Lori Grace, Mark Crispin Miller, Brad Friedman, and myself, Harvey Wasserman, here on the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We are devoting two full hours to election theft, election protection. We have just come from a major media event in downtown Manhattan, and we're here in the studios courtesy of the wonderful Matt and the rest of the crew here at PRN. So, Bob Fitrakis, please continue.
No, I was going to say that it's my position that three people independently, without knowing each other, stab Caesar.
which right. is a, they just happen to all be wanting to do it.
You know,
at the same
it's
time.
Like I believe in coincidence theories, just these hundreds and hundreds of glitches that always go towards the right wing in the country are just all coincidence. But I don't know if you saw, Brad, but Forbes.com actually listed the investments by mm-hmm. Solomer and Higgs. So I think that is a breakthrough.
Yeah, no, it is. Of course, you know, those conspiracy theorists at Forbes. But and I would also, you know, go as far as to say that with the group that you have assembled here, Harvey, clearly this is a conspiracy in and of itself.
It is a conspiracy, and we're about to be joined by Craig Unger as well on the.
Speaking of which, let me make one.
It's
point
a good thing we're not. It's a good thing we're not all riding in the same single engine airplane.
Oh, tell me about it. Now, let me make one point very clear, because, by the way, at the top of the hour, I have to go do Tom Hartman's show, so I'm going to have to leave you guys in the middle. But I do want to make one point very clear in response to this. One, as Bob pointed out, you know, he says there are conspiracies. But I would say two points here. One, it's not a conspiracy theory. We know it's not a theory that voting machines can be, flipped in a matter of seconds. This has been determined by computer scientists and state studies, you know, over the past 10 years. Neither is it a conspiracy when it takes just one person to do it. It only takes one person to flip an election through a few keystrokes. All of that said, however, the concerns about Mitt Romney's, family ties, let's call them, to Hart Inner Civic, now that some of their investors have taken over the third largest voting machine company, are, as I said about a month ago on this show, as serious as the concerns about George Bush's associates owning and controlling Diebold voting machines back in 2004, or Hugo Chavez's associates owning and controlling, and they still do, by the way, the machines made by the Sequoia voting systems. The point is not who has control over these systems. The point is that anybody other than the public has control and oversight, 100% oversight and transparency of these systems. It's not, you know, it's not about Mitt Romney being able to game an election. Frankly, to me, it is about anybody being able to game an election because of these horrible, non-transparent voting systems that we use, and B, the citizenry being 100% unable to oversee the systems to know whether or not they have rigged the system. That is the threat. There is no conspiracy about that. That is 100% scientifically backed. And anybody who disregards that as a conspiracy, as NBC's top election expert Chuck Todd did yesterday, as I spoke to at bradblog.com today, simply has no idea of the science concerning the proprietary technology that we have allowed private companies to use to overtake our public election system. That's the threat. That's real. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a theory. And anybody who tells you otherwise doesn't know what they're talking about.
All right. Well, we are talking with Brad Friedman of bradblog.com. He does know what he's talking about. We're joined in the studio by Mark Crispin Miller as well. This is going to be a two-hour show, the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show on election theft and election protection. Mark Crispin Miller, you have written extensively about election theft, and you've got one book out before, and now you've got a new book out. Tell us about what you're telling us about nuclear power. I slipped into my other identity. About I like to say the election. I don't like to say, but voting machines are essentially the nuclear power. Let's put it this way: voting machines are to democracy what nuclear power is to our survival on the planet. So, having said that, tell us the latest.
Actually, the books I've done on this subject are not new, but I am working on a book that I think will help shed light on the discussion in an interesting way. You know, when I ran into the same brick wall we've all run into, which is the conspiracy theory wall. Who's breathing into the mic? it's Big Brother. It's Big Brother's breath.
Karl Rove is breathing into the mic.
I was curious, you know, as a historian, to know when this started. When did it become a kind of common journalistic reflex to dismiss inconvenient truths as conspiracy theory? Because it hasn't always been done. It's not something that we've seen happen throughout the history of American news. So I went and checked out the archives of the Times and Time Magazine and the Washington Post and did a search on the phrase conspiracy theory and discovered that until the late 60s, it was almost never used, and it was not used in any consistent way. In other words, those things being dismissed as conspiracy theories weren't all left-wing ideas. You know, mm-hmm. It would be used in coverage of a trial, for example, to characterize a tortuous explanation for somebody's actions. But all of a sudden, in the late 60s, it pops up, and it's used over and over and over again from then on. And it's used at first specifically to discredit works that raise questions about the Warren Commission report, you know. And then it turns out that there is a declassified CIA memo, and this already sounds like conspiracy theory, what I'm saying here, except that the memo exists, that went out to all station chiefs on April 1st, 1967, basically laying out the problem of a couple of new books, one by Mark Lane, one by Edward J. Epstein, raising questions about the Warren Commission report. The memo advises that the CIA helped to solve this problem by using our propaganda assets and friends in the media, that's a verbatim mm-hmm. quote, to discredit the work of these conspiracy theorists by using the following five arguments. And I'm not going to go through them, but some of them are arguments we hear, you know, directed at us. For example, if this was really happening, someone would have blown the whistle by now, right? Doesn't that sound familiar? Well, actually, a lot of people have blown the whistle on this, Clint Curtis and many others. But the fact is we still hear these arguments anyway. So the problem we're really dealing with here is not just that this subject, this all-important subject, is being dismissed as a conspiracy theory, but there's a whole range of subjects that are not discussable.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, we can't talk about it because they're dismissed as conspiracy theory. And one of the big problems we face here is the fact that it is career suicide for journalists to delve into any of these subjects, because once you are tagged as a conspiracy theorist, You're really finished. I mean, you're all washed up. There's really no more effective way to silence inconvenient speculation or discussion or investigation than to tag the whole thing as conspiracy theory. It's really admirable how efficient that is as a rhetorical device. I'm serious.
Yes, we're talking with Mark Crispin Miller. We've had Brad Friedman on the line here as well, and we're soon to be joined by Craig Unger, author of a new book, Boss Rove. This is an election protection extravaganza here. We're trying to line up everybody we can in the waning weeks. What do we have, 2-3 weeks now until the election? Today is October
22nd,
so we'd have the 29th, and then the next show, the last show prior to the election would be November 5th.
Yeah, the day before.
So we're actually only two weeks away
from
the election.
2 weeks of fun left.
Yeah, well, tonight there'll be a debate between Barack Obama and Mitt Romney on foreign policy. And I think Mitt learned a lot about foreign policy as a missionary.
Well, that involved whether Dominion and Seidel should count the votes.
Right, Dominion and Seidel being foreign companies that own voting machines, voting machine technology. Craig Ungar, are you on the line? Craig,
can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you. Craig Ugner is author of Boss Rove. What's the subtitle of that book, Craig?
Inside Karl Rove's Secret Kingdom of Power.
Woof. Okay, I thought you were going to say inside his inner ear. I just read a big article about how you shouldn't wipe the wax out of your ear, but that's a different issue altogether. We'll have that later on another Solartopia, on the wellness side of the Green Power and Wellness Show. So, Craig, tell us, please, what relevance Karl Rove might be. And we will be joined later by Jill Simpson and Jim March in the second hour of this Solartopia and Green Power and Wellness Show to talk about a little more about Karl Rove and his role in election theft. While we have you, Craig Ugner, tell us, what is Karl Rove's role in the possibility of stealing the 2012 election for the GOP?
Well, he's pretty much the party boss, and in a lot of ways, he, you know, I think a lot of people wrote him off after 2008 because he was seen as a creature of Bush, who left the White House with a 22% approval rating. Today, he's got hundreds of millions of dollars, though. He is king of the super PACs. In the wake of the Citizens United decision, he put together that. If you look, I mean, we don't see it much here in New York, but as you know, in Ohio, if you turn on the TV, you're being bombarded with ads, from, American Crossroads, which is his super PAC. And, you know, in a lot of ways too, he was also a king of the voter suppression movement. He was one of the fathers of it, going back in 2004. You experienced that firsthand in Ohio.
We did. We were raped and pillaged by Karl Rove. I'd like to have him indicted.
Right. Well, he's back again, and that movement is still very much alive. And I think there's much more attention on it this time around. We see the. As you know, going through the courts in various states, these laws are being challenged. They put forth laws trying to require photo IDs for voters. It's very much like Jim Crow 2.0, or in some cases, Juan Crow, as they try to suppress the Hispanic vote.
Jim and Juan Crow, are they a gay couple, or are we suppressing the gay vote as well here?
I'm not sure they can suppress the gay vote.
If they would be easily identified. So anyone walking into the polls holding, two guys or two women walking to polls holding hands, they'll probably be disqualified. But go ahead, please. Tell us more about Karl Rove. And we will be joined later by Jill Simpson, who I believe collaborated with you on parts of your book about Boss Rove.
Right. Well, in 2004, as you know, one of the key, I did talk to Rove about Smart Tech, which, as you know, is a tech firm in Tennessee, in Chattanooga. And with enormous number of ties to the Republican Party. And back in 2004, Karl Rove's emails were on it. George W. Bush 43.com was on Smart Tech servers. The Republican National Committee, all their servers were hosted there. And I went down to Chattanooga, and I went to Smart Tech. I talked to the CEO, Jeff Averbeck. I also talked to Karl Rove, who told me he'd never heard of Smart Tech.
You talked personally to Karl Rove?
I did.
You lived to tell the tale.
Actually, your friend Bob Petraeus was there. And I went up to Rove and started talking to him, and he told me he'd never heard of Smart Tech, which is hard to believe.
I don't know, Godfather.
I recall he'd been subpoenaed in a suit.
No, the way he said it was, I've never heard of Smart Tech. He did a Marlon Brando thing, right?
He was doing a Karl Rove kind of thing, actually.
Charnin, ask him to call the second hour.
To ask Karl Rove to call?
No, we have Rich Charnin on the line, but we have Brad Friedman's going to have to go at the top of the hour. We have Mark Crispin Miller with us, Lori Grace, Bob Petraeus. This is an all-star show here on election protection as we wind down.
Now, Craig Ugner, was there any connection between the Ohio vote in 2004 and Smart Tech? your book, I think, is the could save us, could actually save us from being conspiracy theorists.
And
what I did is I went to Chattanooga. I did talk to the CEO, who didn't tell me much, but I did talk to other people privately. in smart tech, and I also talked to people in the tech division of the Secretary of State's office in Columbus, Ohio. So I tried to put together sort of a TikTok of exactly what happened on election night in 2004. And as you know, the Secretary of State, Ken Blackwell, who is supposed to oversee fair and impartial elections, but he happened to also be co-chairman of the Bush-Cheney campaign in Ohio.
Well, there's no conflict of interest
none,
there.
None at all. And he happened to sign a contract with a tech company to serve as the fail oversight for the election returns on election night in 2004. And the company he contracted with, of course, was Smart Tech.
And Smart Tech is in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and that's why the votes from Ohio in the 2004 on election night were tallied in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And, of course, there are no computers in Ohio that would have been capable of
that. Well, you wouldn't be capable of that in Ohio, of course, having that those technical abilities. And what happened that night was very interesting because the being a fail oversight meant that they expected so much traffic that they were not sure they'd be able to handle it on the Secretary of State's site. And as the votes came in, again and again, the anchors on TV would say it's coming down to Florida and Ohio, Florida and Ohio. And at around 11 p.m., the networks called Florida for George Bush. And that meant the entire fate of the election hinged on Ohio. So the traffic went through the roof. It went up 700% just after 11 p.m. on the Ohio Secretary of State servers. And at 11:14 p.m., the failover site kicked in, which meant suddenly Smart Tech's servers were active in displaying these election returns. And one thing I did that I thought was sort of interesting is I got the returns, and when they actually came in, that is, county by county returns, and I showed them to Richard Hayes Phillips, who you guys probably know better than I do.
He was a researcher, a mathematician, statistician.
And wrote an important book, went and looked at the numbers county by county.
But he actually examined many of the ballots and had an enormous knowledge of the returns on a county by county level. So I gave him 24 counties and the first 14 or so, first 14 were the last 14 that came in before 11:14 p.m. And he said, well, gee, these look clean. It looks like no one was fooling with these counties. And then I gave him another 10 that came in immediately after 11:14. He said, every single one of them is full of anomalies, and they all favored George W. Bush.
That's what we call it. I want to.
We call that a coincidence.
That's a coincidence, right? Yes, you're. and we call it also a red shift, and that's what we're talking about. There's a major article on the cover of Harper's Magazine, actually quite thorough, by
Victoria Collier.
Mark Crispin Miller had a hand in it. Clearly, Mark Crispin Miller is in the studio with us and had a major hand in a Harper's article. What was it? 2005, 2006.
Yeah, it was about Ohio and the press's refusal.
Right.
To cover what had happened there.
So Victoria Collier in the current Harper's has How to Rig an Election, the GOP Aims to Paint the Country Red, and she uses the term red shift. Craig, are you suggesting, and you are one of the few, with high status individuals who's followed up on our work in Ohio. And
being a journalist and being high status, I've never heard those two phrases in the same sentence.
Well, but I'm a historian, and I remember the day when journalists were high status. So we're going to call you a high status guy, you and Brad Freeman. Brad, are you still with us?
I am. I'd love to ask Craig a question.
Please do. Please do.
Craig, I'm here. Brad Freedman.
Hi, Brad. We spoke a year or so ago.
And thank you for your coverage in Boss Rove. I have a question for you because we were talking, I think, before you came on about what has happened, for years, but certainly even over the last 24 hours, as we've been discussing and as I've been reporting and as I've been trying to respond to guys like Chuck Todd saying that concerns about voting machines are little more than conspiracy.
Yes, now Chuck Todd, Mark Christmas, you mentioned him. Tell us about Chuck Todd real quick.
Well, Chuck Todd is an NBC elections expert.
Right. You're giving me a little quote sign here.
I'm putting air quotes around that because he's an ignoramus. I mean, oh, oops, I didn't mean to say that. I say that with all due respect.
Well, that's his status. At CNN, he's known as the resident ignoramus, but there's so many of them.
It's hard to pick the outstanding example. But he's always been, I think, a kind of right-leaning pundit. On NBC, like so many network newsmen.
Right. And Brad, you were about to tell us what Chuck said about us.
Yesterday he compared concerns about voting machines to what he described as Trump birther garbage.
Right.
He called them conspiracies and so forth. And I tried to respond to him with some, you know, scientifically backed evidence about voting machines, concerns about voting machines, machines that have failed, that can be easily manipulated, that in fact have been manipulated by some Republicans who are now in jail for 156 years in Clay County, Kentucky, for actually changing votes on electronic voting machines.
Is that illegal in Kentucky? I know it's not in Ohio.
Yeah, it actually still is, although it takes about 10 or 20 years before they catch you, apparently. That said, he didn't respond on the Twitters, and so I wrote a fairly detailed article yesterday. It's still at the top of Bradblog.com, you know, asking him, is this conspiracy garbage? And, you know, listing about 20 different points. I probably could have done 100, but just to give him, an idea, he has yet to respond. But my question for Craig Unger is, knowing Karl Rove the way you do through the time you have spent working on your book, I'd love your take. If Karl Rove had the opportunity to change the results of an election through 30 seconds of keystrokes and so forth, do you have any doubt? And maybe you do. I'm really not trying to do this as a leading question.
No. I've yet to find a scruple. I don't like to speculate on what he might or might not.
Are you saying that Karl Rove had a scrupulectomy?
If you find a scruple, I'd be the first to, that's not what he's, he's not about finding scruples and saying, oh, I won't do that. What he's terrific at is working in creating sort of unseen mechanisms of power that where you really, he's almost a magician. He's quite brilliant at it. One of the first ways he became powerful, this was back in the 80s, and the Republican Party in Texas was very, very weak. And frankly, big business didn't need the Republican. They had conservative Democrats like John Connally and Lloyd Bentsen. They said, why should we give to your party? And what Rove did was he created an issue out of nothing called tort reform. And he built political action committees. And he went to Philip Morris, to Big Tobacco, to Big Pharmaceutical. He said, you guys risk billions and billions of dollars in product liability lawsuits. I'm going to save you that money if you just give a few million to my candidates in these political action committees. And suddenly these ads went up. They were AstroTurf groups. And he's capable of doing that in many, many different ways. And that's sort of been the history of his career, I think.
Well, if Karl Rove, Craig Unger, if Karl Rove, sorry.
I was going to ask a question.
Mark Christopher Miller.
I just wanted to get a little bit of the prehistory to that, Craig. Did he not begin his career taking over the college Republicans through the first of many dubious elections?
Chaos, confusion.
Yeah, he did. And Lee Atwater was his campaign manager. And
Lee Atwater has since died of cancer.
He was actually investigated during Watergate by the FBI. They dropped the investigation because they had bigger fish to fry. He was only in his early 20s back then. But the college Republicans was really sort of ground zero for training a lot of the most ruthless Republican operatives, whether it was later Lee Atwater, Grover Norquist, Ralph Reed. There was a whole slew of them.
If Karl Rove, Craig Unger, author of Boss Rove, were to, and this is the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. We have an all-star cast, really, of election protection activists with us. Second hour, we'll be joined by Jim March and Jill Simpson. Mark Chris Romero will stay with us till 3:30 anyway. 4:30, right? But, it'll be 4:30. If Karl Rove were to steal this election, we're with Lori Grace, also election protection activist. If Karl Rove were to steal this election, Craig Unger, what would he do? What would Karl Rove do?
What would he do? I think you're going to see a lot of things in operation. One is, he's resorting to some of the same themes he used back in 2004, and there's an ad out in Ohio called Act of Terror, and it's on Libya. I don't think this is his most effective, because we're no longer in the shadow of 9/11, but he's trying to drum up fear and characterize Obama as a weak on national security, a weak Jimmy Carter-like president. You do have questions about, I'm really best at reporting what has happened rather than what may happen. These have been interesting questions raised about the ownership of Hart Inner Civic, which controls, which is a voting election company that in which the Romneys have an interest.
Bob Fitrakis, did you want to jump in and ask Craig something?
Oh, no, I was just pointing out that OPSEC was on the smart tech servers. And it is the equivalent of the Swift Boaters for Truth there, is that it's the exact same playbook. I was wondering if you could comment at all on the sort of the controversy surrounding Michael Connell. I know you couldn't definitively say
right.
that it was one way or the other, but there were some concerns there, were there not?
Hold on one second. We're going to come back to Michael Connell in a minute. Michael Connell was the IT specialist, worked with the Bush family, and it was at the center of the shift, the red shift in 2004 that gave George W. Bush a god-awful second term. We are required. We're going to take a short break here. This is the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman, and you're going to hear Dana Lyons singing for a minute.
New plants, oil refineries, pipelines, mega dams. Iran, Iraq, Russia, Nigeria, Venezuela, Kurdistan. Oil spill, meltdown, flooding, suburbia, mudslide, traffic jam.
We are back with an all-star show on election protection. This is Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. And we are going to break at 4 o'clock. We'll go off the air immediately at 4 o'clock, but we will continue with the podcast for another hour. And so when you listen in on this on a podcast, you will be able to go for the full two-hour slot on election protection because this is a huge, huge issue. Lori Grace, you wanted to mention very quickly about the listenership of the Gary Null Network, very concerned about GMOs.
Yes, I'm very aware that Gary Null is concerned about health and genetically modified foods, and Proposition 37 in California is a historic proposition to try and make it so that we can know fully what we're eating, including the many genetically modified foods that are currently in common foods we eat, and 75% of processed foods, and also some fresh produce. And I am concerned about all of you out there in California who are listening to this show to pay attention to election protection advice on Proposition 37. And
well, Laura, you were involved with the gay rights, the gay marriage proposition out there, and also the medical marijuana, or the legalizing marijuana. We have medical marijuana in California, but legalizing marijuana was on the ballot, and there's pretty clear evidence that both those referenda were stolen.
Mm-hmm. What I can talk about more fully is Proposition 8. That said that Californians did not want to, that was going to make it not okay for gays to marry, even though the Supreme Court said it would.
It lost by a very narrow margin
It was losing at 8:05 p.m. after the polls closed, and it was winning at 12:33 a.m.
And then it lost. It won before it lost.
No. What I'm saying is it won, which made it so that gays
Could be married.
They would not have the right to marry.
Well, yeah, a lot of Christians like to get out and vote really late at night.
Something that I was also involved with, because I was tracking Mike Connell and Connell Donatelli, was that the Mormon Church had paid $200,000 to Connell Donatelli, a company associated with Mike Connell in Ohio, to come work on their website, quote unquote.
Right. Well, now Craig Unger, you're about to tell us about Michael Connell, and Brad Friedman, if you'll jump in before you leave, that would be good. Michael Connell was who, Craig Unger, and can you tell us what you think of him? What happened to him? Craig Unger.
And he had gone back to the late 90s. He'd been working with the Bushes. He'd put up Jeb Bush's site in Florida, George W. Bush's site as he was running for president, the Bush-Cheney transitional site. He did work again and again for Rove, and Rove's emails were on those servers. And one of the interesting things I found was that as you start to investigate all of this, the evidence again and again began to disappear. And Karl Rove was target of two of the major investigations during the Bush era, the United States Attorney scandal and the Valerie Plame affair. In both cases, his emails were subpoenaed by a congressional committee. But I think I actually call the chapter "The Dog Ate My Homework" because millions of emails simply disappeared. And under the Presidential Records
Coincidence.
Act, yeah, it was.
Well, under the Presidential Records Act, your emails, if you're working for the White House, are public documents. They are owned by the public, and they're supposed to be protected. And destroying them is a crime. They are supposed to be kept on a server that is a White House server that is whitehouse.gov. But instead, Rove had special accounts with the RNC, the Republican National Committee, that were put on Smartex servers, and they disappeared when they were subpoenaed. And this was a trend I found again and again. I'm leading up to Mike Connell, but when Jennifer Bruner became Secretary of State, Democrat who succeeded
Ken Blackwell,
she had vowed to investigate it, and she told me just about a week before she took office, she happened to be going by what were to be her offices, and she walked in unexpectedly and found the entire staff shredding thousands and thousands of documents.
Oh, my God. Did she stop them?
But that would be illegal under ORC 149.43, the Ohio Public Records Act. You must be wrong, Mr. Unger.
Well, and all of this brings us to Mike Connell, who
One second, Craig. Are you going to be able to stay with us for the second hour here, or at least part of it? Because I know Brad Friedman wants to say a word, and then he's got to go, and we're going to continue.
Okay, I'll just for part of it. Okay,
that'll be fine. That'll be fine. Okay. Brad Friedman, did you want to throw something in before you run off to say hi to Tom Hartman?
Yeah, I did. And sorry, I do have to run because I'm.
That's fine. Just make sure that Tom Hartman covers us and that he reads our book, "Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election?" And that he gets totally on this case.
Because I will try to toss that in. I'll be on his radio show shortly, and then on his TV show on RT a little bit later tonight. Craig, you had mentioned that Karl Rove likes to work in, I think,
mysterious ways.
Dark, untransparent places. Is there anything more dark and untransparent than inside an electronic voting system, not just a voting machine, but, you know, computer tabulators and so forth, website reporting utilities like the one you're talking about with Smart Tech? And one other question that I'd love to hear from you before I go. One of the responses I've heard, from folks, Democrats, particularly over the years and certainly over the past 24 hours or so, that discussion of these ideas somehow suppresses the vote. It demoralizes turnout. I found just the opposite, that when people understand how their election system works, it makes them want to fight harder to make sure they can vote and that their vote is counted accurately and in a way we know it's counted accurately. But have you found any evidence in your reporting that this sort of discussion depresses turnout in any way?
No, I haven't. I haven't at all. But in terms of the other question, I mean, these companies, I looked at Smart Tech, and it took me quite a while to figure. Everyone had said it was tied to Karl Rove. And I had to trace it through several different corporate incarnations and find that the original company was founded by two men, who Mercer Reynolds and Bill DeWitt, or rather they put in the initial, they were the big investors initially. And they have a very interesting relationship to both Rove and the Bush family. Because in the 80s, George W. Bush had two or three oil companies that went belly up, and he was bailed out by
one
two
of them was called the United States of America.
Excuse me?
One was called the United States of America when bellied up when he was president of the United States.
Well, no, I'm talking about George W. Bush.
Yeah, that's right.
the younger George Bush, right. Who was then starting out in the – his father was vice president and then president. But he was trying to make it in the oil industry, and the price of oil was plummeting back then. And actually, his father had to go out to the Saudis and ask them to raise the price of oil.
well, that was nice of him.
But he was bailed out.
Help out his son by raising the price of oil.
The people who helped out his oil companies were the Royal House of Saud and then two Midwestern multimillionaires, Bill DeWitt and Mercer Reynolds. Oh. And they happened to put the money into Smart Tech. And it was Mercer Reynolds who became finance chairman of the Republican Party in 2004 and raised $240 million for the Bush-Cheney ticket. So that is their tie to Karl Rove and the Bush family.
Okay, Brad Friedman, we're going to have to bid you adieu. Say hi to Tom Hartman for us. We are going to stay on with the podcast. We're going to leave live air right now. Brad, thanks for being with us. Craig Unger, you're going to stick with us for a while. We have Mark Crispin Miller in the studio. Lori Grace is with us, Bob Fitrakis. And we will be joined by Jim March and Jill Simpson to talk about Karl Rove a little more. Thank you for being with us. This has been a live broadcast of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. It will be available as a podcast, and it will be expanded to 2 hours at PRN.fm, and you'll be able to hear this, probably the only radio show in the country, totally devoted for 2 full hours to election protection. Thank you, Matt. And we're leaving live air, but we'll stick with us if you're listening to the podcast for another hour. And we'll be back momentarily.
We're going to keep going here.
Okay, so we are now in podcast land. We are not live anymore. We are in podcast land. Lori Grace, if you want to track down Jim March and Jill Simpson, that'll be fine.
I will. I just have a concern with the listeners before that they didn't know where to go in California to
Okay, so tell
it.
Us where to go for the...
If you want to try to protect some of the vote in California for Proposition 37, I know many of you care about it. Go to Democracy and Election Protection. democracyandelectionintegrity.org, and there'll be instructions on there for something known as videoing the vote.
Okay, democracyandelectionprotection.org in California, and we are attempting to establish a similar setup in Ohio. We've only got a couple weeks to go until the election, but if we can get some people on the ground to really monitor the vote and the vote count in Ohio, we can make a difference. We're still honored by the presence of Craig Unger on the phone and Mark Crispin Miller in the studio. Craig, we were talking about Karl Rove and his roots, but Mark Crispin Miller, can you tell us in your two books on election protection, and Bob Fetrakis is with us, my co-conspirator from Columbus Free Press, freepress.org, co-author with me of five books on election protection. You only have two, Mark. And,
I know. You
got to catch up to us. So tell us, your fingerprints of Karl Rove, have you seen them in your researches? And Craig, I'm going to jump in when you feel the desire.
Well, sure. I mean, his fingerprints are hard to miss. I can't pretend to know half of what Craig knows about, you know, the actual sort of corporate maneuverings by Karl Rove and so on. But I can't say that when it comes to assessing his propaganda influence, you know, we have to pay attention to the fact that he's extremely good. He's always been very good at figuring out how to attack the enemy precisely where he's strongest. You know, people were very surprised that he organized Swift Boat Veterans for Truth to go after John Kerry precisely on the basis of his military record. This would seem counterintuitive,
yeah, right,
because that was Kerry's greatest strength and Bush's greatest weakness because of his dubious, history of service or non-service in the Texas Air National Guard. You know, and the suppression of that story is itself like an epic of slyness and manipulation and so on.
Well, one thing you got to say about Karl Rove, he is a smart dude.
Oh, he's very smart.
He does
smart.
Get the job done. Would you agree with that, Craig Unger? Is Karl Rove a smart guy? Craig Unger, are you with us?
It's interesting watching him speak. He's a good speaker, and I saw him in Ohio, and he was... in Cedarville, Ohio, I later checked the median income there. Per capita median income is $9,500 a year. And he had them on their feet cheering for tax cuts for billionaires. And he's very good, as Mark was saying, at putting together a narrative. And it's often a counter-narrative of that he's fabricated out of whole cloth. You may remember the mission accomplished landing on the aircraft carrier.
Boy, that one really backfired, didn't it?
It did, because the war didn't quite end.
Right.
Then and went on for a few more years.
Well, here's a question, though. How closely is Karl Rove tied to Mitt Romney?
Well, he's tied very, very closely. And this is when I was saying he sort of does it without fingerprints. He was, if you carefully go over what he did for Fox News and on the Wall Street Journal during the Republican primaries, he is effectively shooting in the back all the other candidates. And, this is a guy who, after the Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court, he became king of the super PACs, and he really had hundreds of millions of dollars under his control. So when he's a talking head on Fox News, he's just not another pundit. He's telling Sarah Palin, look, I've got hundreds of millions of dollars. You're not getting any of it. You're out. You're not even going to run. And he took apart Rick Perry, Rick Santorum, Newt Gingrich, Michelle Bachmann, one by one by one. Romney never really took off during the primaries, if you recall. And then if you look at Romney's high command, Ed Gillespie is one of the top strategists. Well, Ed Gillespie is very close to Karl Rove. He co-founded American Crossroads with Rove. If you look at Beth Myers, she's been Romney's, she was his chief of staff. She later oversaw the selection process for the vice presidential nominee. She's a Karl Rove protege. Stuart Stevens is in charge of media. He was had worked with Rove in the past. Karl Forte is not terribly well known. He's political director of American Crossroads. He's sort of said to be Karl Rove. And he also oversees Romney's Restore Our Future, Romney's PAC.
So do you think that, and Mark Crispin Miller can jump in with, do you think that Karl Rove actually designated Mitt Romney to be the
Republican nominee from the start?
Are you asking me or Mark?
Both of you.
Yeah. Well, I think he was... he saw him as the most electable candidate. I don't think he was his first choice. I think he would have liked Jeb Bush, would have been his first choice. I think he could have lived with Tim Pawlenty or Chris Christie. He's the antithesis of the Tea Party, and he faced a real challenge there because the Tea Party sees him and George W. Bush as the emblem of the emblematic of the Republican establishment that became big spenders, that violated some of the key conservative principles, and they don't like Rove at all. And Rove had to sort of accommodate them enough to win over their big money. That is, and I'm talking about the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson. Sheldon Adelson is putting in as much as $100 million his campaign. The Koch brothers have said they'll put in as much as $400 million.
Well, of course, Sheldon Adelson stands to make about $2 billion in tax breaks, and the Koch brothers stand to make billions by the destruction of environmental regulations. So, this is just business for them. It's not any big ideological commitment. Go ahead, Mark Chris Miller.
What Craig is saying, you know, kind of begs the question of to what extent Romney did well in the primaries illegitimately, you know.
Based on, okay.
Well, I mean, there's a piece by Michael Collins, who's, you know, an election integrity activist, mm-hmm. that I put up on my own blog today, which talks about how much vote flipping went on in a number of the primaries that Romney won. Now, this is something that the Ron Paul people and the Santorum supporters have been talking about. But I don't think that fact should dissuade us from actually considering whether or not it's true.
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
The fact is that for many different reasons, one of which Craig...
Well, no, I have a lot of... I think Ron Paul is extremely credible.
Yeah.
I heard Ron Paul... I watched Ron Paul speak on the military. It was one of the best speeches
right.
I've ever seen on the military.
Well, the
he
fact is...
astounding.
Right, but, you know, the fact is he has a large and devoted organization.
Mm-hmm.
Craig's point about how Romney looks to the Tea Party people is quite... apposite here. There's a lot of evangelicals who distrust him because he's a Mormon, you know.
Right.
There's a kind of class dimension to the Tea Party movement. They naturally see Mitt Romney as completely appalling. So the question is, how is it that he did so well? How did he end up being the nominee of a party comprised as it is, you know, of evangelicals and others? We have to, you know, look carefully at the evidence before us. Suggesting that Romney may not have won some of those primaries, which, you know, to people like us wouldn't be all that surprising.
Well, the case in point there is the very, I believe it was the very first one, was Iowa.
This is Craig Unger speaking here.
Where
go ahead,
Romney, I don't want to misspeak, but was said to have won it by, like, this is an Iowa caucus, not a primary, so the vote totals were very small, but Romney supposedly won it by roughly 8 votes or something. Mm-hmm. And months later, was it revealed that Rick Santorum actually won it. And, of course, the person who announced the victory on Fox News was Karl Rove.
Another coincidence.
Yes, another coincidence. Jill Simpson, you've worked with Karl Rove for many years. Why do you think Karl Rove might have supported Mitt Romney to be the nominee?
Well, that kind of goes back to a story. In 2000, I believe it was... or 2002, Mitt Romney, Carl started talking about possibly Romney as a presidential candidate. He also talked about Bob Riley as a potential presidential candidate. And if we'd not had the Siegelman mess in Alabama, it might have been Bob Riley as opposed to
Romney. Bob Riley was a Republican governor of Alabama.
Yeah, that's correct. And we would always tell Carl that the religious right in the southern states would not vote for Romney because of the fact that he was a Mormon. Several of the people who were connected with the Riley campaign, because we were constantly beating at Mitt Romney, saying, oh, you can't use him, because we wanted Bob Riley in, because he was our guy.
So what do you think persuaded Karl Rove to go ahead and run with Mitt Romney?
Money. I mean, Romney brings a lot of money to the table as far as the fact that he wants to run and Carl wants paid for the job that he does. And one of the things he always would tell us is that Romney had more money than God.
As a Mormon, I don't know if that's exactly the case, but how much money does Jesus have? Do we know? Craig Unger, what do you think about that? Do you think that Karl Rove might have chosen to go with Mitt Romney just because of Mitt's bank account?
I don't know. I mean, I think when Romney, and Jill would know more about this than I, but Bob Riley was never in the mix this
No, he was not. He was a non-player at this time. Well, because as Jill points out, there was a huge mess in Alabama having to do with Don Siegelman and all that.
You know,
stuff.
I do think Rove is extremely adept at accompanying him, at accommodating events that really don't that he's not crazy about. And the way he dealt with the Tea Party back in 2000, he did not want Dick Cheney to be vice president, but once it happened, he lived with it and made the best of it.
Well, it's probably because Cheney threatened to kill him.
Well,
go ahead. Actually, what happened was Cheney invited him to go hunting, and rather than turn him down, Rove said, well, okay, you can be vice president.
I see.
Okay. Jim March, your feeling about Karl Rove's relationship with Mitt Romney?
Look, I'm not the political strategist. I'm disconnected.
All right, so...
I'm not the political strategist here. I'm the wrong guy to ask.
Okay.
I'm your voting machine wonk. I mean,
okay.
No.
So, Mark Christopher Miller, the choice of Mitt Romney, actually a little surprising in to me. I mean, he is outside the mainstream. He only had a one-term governorship in Massachusetts, but he does have more money than God, apparently. How important is Mitt's money to leveraging these voting machines and getting them turned around? And Craig Unger, if you could talk about that too, we'd appreciate it.
Well, I mean, you guys have raised the issue of Bain Capital's involvement with hard intercivic voting, right?
Right, that's correct.
So, you should really ask yourself that question because you know more about it than I do. The fact is that, the hand of his own firm behind a company whose voting machines will be counting a considerable number of votes in this election should be something that isn't just discussed on a lefty radio show like this one. This should be a top story throughout the media.
That's exactly right.
Right?
Well, why isn't this the lead story on the New York Times, the Washington Post, to have a presidential candidate owning voting machines in an election? Craig, since you did so much research on Michael Connell and that IT connection there, do you think it's significant in 2012 that Mitt Romney actually has a direct connection to hard intercept?
Well, it certainly could be. I mean, I sort of report on what things after they happen, but it raises, if it's a close election and, and things end up going in Romney's favor in Ohio, this raises, has the appearance of a conflict of interest. And for that reason alone, you'd think it would be outlawed, but it's not, and we'll have to see what happens.
Jill Simpson,
I did want to add just one thing,
please,
though.
Please.
I did go over in 2007, as I'm sure you know, Harvey, the Secretary of State of Ohio did a serious report on voting machines, including hard intercivic, and it found it to be completely insecure.
Yes, that's correct. And Jill Simpson, when you were working with Karl Rove, did you have direct knowledge about Michael Connell and the IT situation there?
I knew that Michael Connell worked for him. And I also want to go back and address one other thing, which was the Hart Intercivic. I knew a lot about Hart Intercivic, and I know you and Bob have been covering that, and so I wasn't really asked to look at that this time. But Hart Intercivic was very important in the 2000 and 2004 election, and it's gone underreported as well, and I'm hoping y'all do some stories on it. But Hart Intercivic started out as a ballot company that made the paper ballots. So the first time I ever heard about Hart Intercivic was when at Smart Tech they were holding up the ballot, the butterfly ballot, and I heard about a guy named Tom Hicks who owned a large portion of Hart Intercivic that was located in Austin, and he's the guy who bought the Rangers.
The Texas Rangers. He bought out George W. Bush from the Texas Rangers, saved George W.'s tush, as they say.
That's exactly right.
And made him very rich.
Made him very rich. So So this Hardiner civic connection goes way back to the Bush family, and they were Craig. Did you come across them?
Well, I'm certainly aware of Tom Hicks, and it's absolutely true. He owned the Rangers for many years and owns several other sports teams. But this was the deal that made George W. Bush rich. He invested $600,000 in the Rangers and came away with $15 million.
Well, that's not bad.
It's just a coincidence.
It's just a coincidence.
It's a lot better that he was losing money hand over fist in his oil company. So.
But he may have made him president as well because of those ballots.
Yes. So now what you're saying, and there has been some press, some media, and Mark, you may want to comment, this, putting the idea out that there was some distance between Karl Rove and Mitt Romney. And what we're hearing now is that's really not the case. That Mitt and Carl are...
Well, they are not close in the way that Rove was with George W. Bush.
Uh-huh.
And in some ways, he's had to... You know, it was interesting. Before the first debate, when Romney appeared to be very, very weak, if you remember, that 47%...
Yes.
Leak was sort of running away with the campaign, and there was a narrative going on there. It had sort of been a 1-2 punch for Obama. First, I think Clinton's speech was very successful at the Democratic convention.
That's right.
And then you had the 47% leak, which reinforced the narrative of Romney being this rich plutocrat who didn't care about anyone.
Right.
And Rove seemed sort of helpless then, I have to say, and it looked like Obama was running away with things. After the first debate, the narrative has changed enormously, though.
Right, exactly. Do you think they drugged Obama prior to that debate? I mean, it sure looked like it.
I can't speak to that.
Well, Jill, do you have something to say?
Yeah, I do. The fact about it is I don't think Carl was necessarily originally that big of a fan of Mitt Romney. Don't get me wrong. Carl is not in Washington, D.C., and really all over the world as a kingmaker. He makes presidents for all over the world. The operation at SmartTech is an international operation. He's made the president of Sweden. He's been involved in the Ukrainian election.
Did he bring that guy in Canada, that horrible prime minister in Canada, too?
Yeah, that's what I heard and understand. Okay. And additionally, what you've got to understand is Romney wanted Carl. It was not Carl necessarily wanted Romney. Romney courted him because he wanted to be the king.
Mark,
I have a question.
Mark Crispin Miller.
I have a question for Craig, actually. Craig, what do you know about any kind of prior connections or the relationship between Romney and the Bush family? Are there any worth talking about?
I really don't know that much about it, no.
Okay, so the... they didn't go to the same church. That's pretty obvious. And Mitt's not been down to see the solar panels at Crawford lately, probably.
No, but I will answer that. So
okay,
you know,
please.
Mitt's father was in politics, and George H.W. Bush, you know, being the CIA director and also having been the head of the Republican Party and all that, he knew Romney's father.
Well, that would be George Romney, who was the governor of Michigan. But, you know, George Romney made an amazingly famous and inappropriate, I suppose, or it was called a faux pas at the time when he went to Vietnam. And actually denounced the war and said they'd brainwashed him in Vietnam. It really changed the whole dynamic. George Romney ran for president in the Republican primaries, didn't get very far. But
well, that destroyed his career. When
that
he
did,
said they
yes.
gave me a something like they gave me a proper brainwashing over there, which was actually true.
True, yes.
But although, that's what a gaffe is. That's a gaffe is an unpleasant truth, you know.
Yes, and George Romney actually had been...
destroyed his political career.
Had been the head of American Motors, and was quite successful there.
He was a moderate Republican.
Yes, he was. There used to be moderate Republicans. They don't exist anymore.
Well, they're Democrats.
Now they're called Democrats. That's
right. Or libertarians.
Okay, this is a second hour of an election protection special. Bob Fitrakis is in the lobby here, and we're talking with Jill Simpson, Jim March, Mark Crispin Miller, and the studio. Bob will rejoin us shortly, and Craig Unger on the line, along with Richard Charnon. Richard, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Jim March here is with us as an expert on electoral voting machines, and you are a statistician. What did you want to talk to us about, Richard?
Well, a couple of quick things. first of all, I want to say hello to all you people. Mark Crispin Miller, I never had the pleasure of speaking to him, but we've emailed back and forth quite a few times. And anyway, I've got a new book coming out. So it will go into, it's basically an analysis of pre-election and exit polls for the layman. What I want to do is to show how the rigging of these polls takes place and how they, as we see now, as we see
the rigging of the polls or the election machines?
Both.
Or both? Okay.
Yeah. Well, actually, the pre-election polls paved the way. They set the table for the election results, and the table is cleaned up when the exit polls come in. So that's how it works. And as I posted and continue to post every day on my election model, which is the only one that is a fraud model, looks at the true vote and fraud every day, what I'm doing is trying to show that Obama is actually much further ahead than the polls indicate. Polls telling us it's a tight race, that it's 40. Well, Gallup has it at 51-45, which is totally outrageous for Romney. But
does Karl Rove have any special relationship, Craig Unger or Jill, with the Gallup organization? It's an anomaly. The Gallup poll has consistently been showing Mitt Romney winning the election.
Well,
they're the only poll out there showing that.
I don't know that Rove has any specific relationship with it, but Gallup is widely seen as leaning heavily Republican, as is Rasmussen. You know, I think another issue in the polling that's not clear to me is that increasingly you have young kids who use cell phones and don't have landlines. Mm-hmm. And to the best of my knowledge, almost all the polling is done exclusively with landlines, and that would omit a lot of people who only have cell phones, and I think there's reason to believe they would lean towards the Democrats.
Okay, well, that's fair. Yes, Jill, please.
I could address
Jill Simpson.
I could address that also. While we were in Omaha, Nebraska, we passed the Gallup poll, and I told Jim I would like to do something with them sometimes, with the Gallup office, and pointed them out. They're not far from the EE and S election.
ESNS
election operation of Bob Yurosevich. And so I found that somewhat interesting, but nevertheless, the Gallup poll has always been Republican-leaning. It's one of the polls that we always used when I worked and volunteered for the Rove operation because it was so favorable to us. And in order to be able to explain when you have a flip on a five-point spread, you've got to have polling companies that will put you within 5 points. If you don't, you have a problem. I noticed this week that we have actually polling saying that Romney is ahead.
Gallup has been putting mm-hmm. Romney ahead, and it doesn't seem credible to me. But Richard Charnin, you're saying that your statistics indicate that Obama is farther ahead in the polls than
it's really quite simple. You look at the state pre-election polls, and you do a weighted average, you find that Obama's ahead by 2.5 or 3 points. So to me, Gallup has no business. They don't produce state polls, pre-election polls. They have a national poll, which is a tracking poll, a five-day tracking poll. They cannot be interviewing enough people in each of the states to come up with any kind of a reasonable margin of error. Because they're interviewing like 2,500, 3,000 people over a five-day period. So they're not running. They're not even running. Like Rasmussen is running state polls, which, of course, are Republican-leaning. So what we have is really, it's the same thing. It's nothing new. They do it in every election. It's a combination of factors. They interview only likely voters by cutting out would-be Democratic voters, new voters. So that, in addition to, of course, you mentioned the cell phones, but there's a whole combination of techniques that they use to make it appear that the Republicans are in the lead or it's a tight race.
Jim March, you're in the studio here. You're an expert on electronic voting machines. How does this segue over to the theft of elections that we're concerned about here?
Well, obviously, it's about making it more plausible. The latest fear I have is that somebody's going to try and manipulate the foreign U.S. citizen overseas vote, which is a combination of civilian and military. I'm specifically concerned about that in this election cycle, and I can go into details.
Well, that actually happened in 2000, as you recall. They accused Joe Lieberman of wanting to deprive our troops overseas of the vote. Do you remember that, Mark Crispin? You remember that?
Well, they accused Gore of wanting to do that, and Lieberman actually sided with the Republicans in that controversy. It was just a propaganda tactic, and of course, Lieberman, being a Republican, helped them out. But go ahead, Jim. Talk here, about the difference about what's happening now.
Let me tell you why I'm concerned. In 2009, federal Congress passed a law called the MOVE Act, Military Overseas Voter Enhancement. Now, it was sponsored by a guy who on paper is a Democrat but often votes very Republican and leans Republican. That's Chuck Schumer. Okay. Chuck Schumer and Dianne Feinstein.
Senator from New York State. Dianne Feinstein is a senator from California.
They're both very similar in that they use some issues to appear very touchy-feely liberal. Gun control is one big one for both of them. But they often vote in a very neocon or align themselves in Congress in a very neocon pro-war direction. Both of them have that tendency. Well, in Schumer's case, he passed this law that says several things. First of all, I assume most of your readership is going to be familiar with the Help America Vote Act of 2002.
Yes, tell us what the law says.
Well, the MOVE Act, in order to understand how evil the MOVE Act is, you have to understand the difference and the similarity to HAVA. HAVA was about putting in new money, federal money, for voting machines.
Right.
And security standards put in place.
$3.9 billion.
Right. MOVE Act supplies a smaller amount of money for new voting machines to handle MOVE Act compliance at the state and local level. Again, federal money supplying new machines, but this time there's no security standards whatsoever. And what the MOVE Act requires is that the overseas or military voter has to be given the choice to register to vote electronically and to actually vote electronically. Now, both of those are incredibly dangerous, but the actual voting electronically from overseas over the internet is extremely scary.
All right, so it's dangerous because the votes could be manipulated.
Well, it's worse than that. You have two different possible attacks here. You take a data mining company to find out which overseas voters can be impersonated. You can then take a very small attack team that both creates new voter registrations for those people and then votes them from an overseas location. Nobody's ever had that ability before. The other problem with the MOVE Act, though, is it's specifying this new software coming into the system, coming into the central tabulator operations area, and it's able to pump data into both the voter registration database and the vote counting database, the central tabulator.
Are you suggesting that Karl Rove and Republican operatives could create fictional voters?
Yes, no question. The MOVE Act, you couldn't have designed a system better suited to doing exactly that.
So instead, we're going to have like electrons voting for president in the United States.
You could have a team of a dozen thugs in the Cayman Islands voting thousands of times. Tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of times, and spreading the damage out to specific counties where it looks close and it looks like a vote can be flipped by a relatively small percentage of votes, 3%, 4%, somewhere in there. Look, in order to make this fraud work, you need three groups of people. You need political strategists telling you where to attack.
That would be Karl Rove.
Now, Karl Rove, Crossroads Strategies, Stuart Hall, people like that. Yeah, that network is obviously present. You need data mining companies to tell you exactly how to do it in terms of which voters to impersonate. And that is either Melissa Data or Hank Asher's TLO, the last one, out of Florida. Hank, if I was a betting man, I'd say Hank Asher was involved.
Okay.
Hank Asher is a former Coke dealer, known ties to people
like... As opposed to a Coke brother.
Yeah, as opposed to a Coke brother. No, a different kind of Coke.
Okay.
Hank Asher has known ties to Rudy Giuliani, Fox News, Admiral Poindexter, of all people. Hank Asher is a data mining expert.
Okay.
Most of your readership will know about Choice Point and how they very infamously did false voter purges in Florida in 2002. Well, Choice Point had bought something called Database Technologies, which was Hank Asher.
Okay.
So it was Hank Asher's Hank Asher personally, his people, and his technology that was involved in those voter purges in Florida. Choice Point has now mostly gone away, at least as a visible threat. Okay, they had bad PR coming out of the Florida purges. They had a major data breach. They sold out pennies on the dollar to LexisNexis, and they're probably not that dangerous right now.
Okay.
But Hank Asher's non-compete clause when he sold DBT is now expired as of a couple of years ago, and he's back.
So Hank Asher is involved in this potential for creating fictional voters overseas and flooding the
key county. He would be the data mining portion of the overall scheme if this is going on like the MOVE Act appears to have been designed to do.
Okay, that's interesting. Craig Unger, what's your comment on that?
Well, that's all new to me. I really, we're talking about what may happen, and maybe it will, maybe it won't. But I learned about Hank Asher for the first time today.
Is this something that Carl Rove would be prone to do, since you've written a book about Carl and interviewed his psychiatrist?
Well, I'm still looking for his scruples, and as soon as I find them, I'll let you know.
Mark Crispin Miller.
Oh, I think he's eminently capable of doing something. I mean, as Craig says, what would stop him? He has never shown that he possesses a single scruple, and okay. It's all about. We have to understand. We have to step back for a moment and understand what this is really all about. This is all about the necessary subversion of the democratic process in order to put in place a regime that would never, in a million years, be approved by the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, whether you're talking about the theocratic side of the equation, players who basically believe that the majority is evil,
right.
and that the righteous ones should be the ones to decide the results of elections, or whether you're talking about the agenda of the Koch brothers and people like that, who have to persuade a certain plurality of the electorate that what's good for them is good for everybody else, and that's mm-hmm. where Craig's example of Rove giving those brilliant speeches to people who make no money and making them think that they're going to do well
if
the people who are screwing them do better. But the fact is that all of this is necessary for a political party that has long since ceased to represent anything even close to a majority in the United States. They have to do this. In order to prevail, they have to steal elections. In order to prevail, they have to have effective control of the corporate press. You know, all of this is necessary because the actual will of the electorate is inimical to their interest. They have to destroy it, whatever it takes. And I think that whether it's assassinations or whatever it takes, they'll do it. They're that ruthless. That's what I think, anyway.
Jill Simpson.
I started a big adventure, as I told earlier today, at a press conference with Jim Marsh when Jim approached me and asked me if I would travel all over the United States with him, just showing him election sites that I was aware of that could impact in election fraud. And one of the first places that I suggested that we go, because I had never been there, but I knew that Hank Asher and Carl Rove was friends, was, and had heard his name mentioned by Carl before, was in Boca Raton at Asher's TLO. At the time, we had used Hank Asher's products. It had been Choice Point when I was an operative. But I told Jim I had just been following Hank Asher kind of as an academic interest of mine, and that he had developed into TLOXP. And even I was somewhat surprised when I went down there. But what you should always remember about Hank Asher is he has some motivation here to help Carl, because he is the recipient of a large number of government contracts. And he provides the databases and the works, like his Matrix did, for state and government contracts, and to the federal government, to operations like the CIA and FBI. They buy his products as well. In fact, he's the guy who turned around and did the terrorist deal, where he showed who the terrorist was to the government. So his data mining operation is huge.
Okay. So Hank Asher's not been on the radar screen. But, we will be watching Hank Asher with great interest. Mark Christopher, no, I know I have to leave. Is there a last statement you want to make here?
Well, yeah. I mean, people always ask, understandably enough, what can one do, you know? And there are various things that can and must be done, both in time for this election and beyond this election, in order to try to restore, you know, something of America's democratic traditions, and more importantly, at last to realize America's academic America's democratic ideals. But I think that, you know, we're so close to the election now that the most important thing is for people to understand that if Romney pulls off yet another one of these miraculous Republican upset victories,
it'll be an immaculate reception.
Right. If and when that happens, and there's really no reason to believe that it won't, because I think it's close enough, at least at the moment, for them to be able to pull it off.
So, Mark, do you believe, like me, that Barack Obama will win the popular vote and then mysteriously lose the electoral vote?
Something like that. We'd be nuts not to face the fact that it could happen again, because it's happened so often in the past. But the point is, I think that people have to be prepared not to collapse in despair. You know, progressive outfits like Move On and all the rest of them, and the Democratic Party, constantly have their hand out, and they're always asking, send $5, send $10, so we can get out the vote, you know. And I think they're setting people up for a really kind of dangerous psychological collapse by making them think that if they give money and they have a really vigorous get-out-the-vote effort, it will automatically mean a Democratic victory. Well, when you're dealing with an election system like ours, you can't put all your eggs in that basket, you know. Mm-hmm. Progressives were getting out the vote to make sure that the Dave Prosser of the Wisconsin Supreme Court would be defeated. Well, guess what? He won after Kathy Nicholas in Waukesha County happened to find over 14,000 votes on her computer in his favor, and she worked for him for 7 years, you know. The same thing happened with the three members of the Supreme Court who were up for election. The same thing happened with the recall election in Wisconsin. Repeatedly, the progressives, the unions were all saying, send us money, give us money, we're going to get out the vote. It's going to work this time. They're doing it now, you know. They are not taking into consideration the distinct possibility that no matter how much they work to get out the vote, they could, quote, lose, unquote, anyway. So I think one of the most important things we can urge people to do is to be highly skeptical and not accept any of the bogus explanations that we're bound to hear for this upset victory, such as, for example, oh, it was a huge outpouring of Christian voters, as right. in 2004, when there was no such outpouring of Christian voters. That was a right-wing Christian talking point. All the available, highly sophisticated and precise polling data from back then makes quite clear that very few voters voted for religious reasons then. Nevertheless, the press repeated it. That was one of the explanations used to justify a Bush victory, unlikely as that was. We're hearing now from Rove and others that the polls skew left, so you can't trust the polls. So that if there's another upset victory, we'll hear, yeah, that big Obama advantage, it was actually illusory anyway. What I'm saying is there are all these narratives that are being floated right now to make us believe that an upset victory by Romney is the real thing. I'm urging people not to buy it. I want to emphasize again the importance of all of your listeners going out and getting a copy of the new Harper's Magazine, the November issue. It's got an absolutely killer cover story by Victoria Collier that kind of, you know, lucidly and comprehensively gives us an overview of what's wrong with the voting system now. Okay, we got to be prepared to fight this. It doesn't, you know, I'm not a Democrat. I'm not an admirer of Barack Obama. I'm always highly critical of him. That's not the point. The point is that the American people have the right to expect that the one they voted for should be the one that gets elected. But beyond that, if we're ever going to have a genuinely progressive and really democratic system that involves more than the two parties, that entails getting rid of the Electoral College, if we're ever going to have that, you know, we're not going to get there without having a viable election system. It's simply not going to happen. We're not going to be able to follow Noam Chomsky, who's going to lead a revolution into Washington, D.C. It's not going to happen. We have to have a viable election system, and we're never going to get it if we don't focus as soon as possible on what's wrong with the system now. It needs to be radically reformed, and this means people have to talk about that. They have to face the truth about it.
Well, we're talking about with Mark Crispin Miller here at the Solartopia Green Panel. Well, on the show, thank you, Mark, for that. I want to point out that at freepress.org, with Bob Fitrakis. We have been advocating universal hand-counted paper ballots, universal automatic voter registration, of course, the removal of money from politics and a four-day voting.
And private companies.
And, yeah, getting private companies out. As Jesse Jackson said, we should not be having public elections being conducted and counted by private corporations. Mark Crispimillo, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And your two books are called?
Fooled Again, The Real Case for Electoral Reform, and Loser Take All, which is a collection of essays by a number of different people.
Great. All right. Thank you, Mark Crispimillo, for being with us here in the studio at www.prn. Craig Unger, are you still with us?
Yes, but I'm afraid I have to go as well.
Well, how about a closing valedictory comment from you? We've just had one from Mark Crispimillo. What can you tell us about Boss Rove and the 2012 election?
Well, the reason I wrote this book and my fear is that Rove may be the decisive factor in this election. And until the first debate, it really looked like it was a comfortable lead for Obama. I just got a new poll came out, the Monmouth University poll, showing Romney ahead by 3 points. And it shows the extraordinary impact of these ads that Rove has been running, that American Crossroads had been running in the swing states American foreign policy, for example, national security. Obama was very strong. After all, he killed Osama bin Laden. Now Romney is ahead, and you see that having its effect, even on in terms of who would do the most in terms of protecting Social Security and Medicare. Romney beats Obama, believe it or not.
You gotta be kidding me.
I am not kidding you. I'm sorry on this, but sorry to give you the bad news. And this includes cell phone users, by the way, so it includes those younger people. And of course, we have the voter suppression movement. That Rove really started that. There's a guy named Nathan Sproul who's been out, who's now, and he worked for Rove in 2004. He's got operations going in dozens of states to suppress the vote. So, you know, we're going to be in for a bumpy ride, and I'm not sure how it's going to come out, but Rove is playing a huge role in it.
Very interesting, Craig. And, well, what can we do about it?
You know, you can't do anything unless you know really the details. And so much of what goes on goes on in a way that's not transparent. So I think it's, you know, that's why I hate to plug my own book, but that I try to reach in Boss Rove. I try to go into some of those details, the way it happened in Ohio in 2004, that the idea that these so-called voter ID campaigns that Rove has been promoting is not to make for a more secure election, and it's not to fight this non-existent voter fraud where dead people vote. It's really to suppress the vote, and then of course and to keep Hispanics and African Americans, minorities, from voting, and also you do have the threat of electronic voting, and I think there has of hacking computers and screwing up electronic voting. I've talked to an awful lot of people in the computer industry. I've never found anyone who thinks voting machines are really secure. So those are three of the issues, I think, that need to be fought.
All right. Craig Unger, author of Boss Rove, thanks so much for being with us on our two-hour election protection special. I'll be talking to you again, Craig, I hope.
Thank you.
Good luck with
yes.
your book, and good luck to see you again after 40 years.
Yes, we'll do it in another 40.
All right. This is a special two-hour edition of the Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. We've been on with some of the stars of the election protection movement, such as it is, and looking at the prospects of the GOP stealing America's 2012 election. Jim March, you are in the studio with us, and you are an expert. What do you think are the main paths? You've mentioned this overseas dimension here. What are the main paths electronically that you expect the Karl Rove and the Republican operatives to use to take this election?
Well, one of the more dangerous ways that they can influence local elections and elections at a county-by-county level is to work with known subverted or subvertible election officials in particular counties. Now, the key thing with that is Karl Rove's overall machine owns the national training program for all election officials in the entire country. That election training operation is known as the Election Center out of Houston. It's run by a guy named R. Doug Lewis, who has known Rove ties. In fact, back at the time that R. Doug Lewis was the guy in charge of the Texas Republican Party, he was Rove's boss. This is late 70s, early 80s time frame, right, Joel? Right.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Jill Simpson, also in the studio.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Well, so if you've got a guy who deals with the training for election officials, then that guy, R. Doug Lewis, can tell you who can be approached as far as being corrupt. I'll give you a good example. In Pima County, Arizona, where I live, city of Tucson, we have an election official who is the only Pima County manager ever to get his county issue credit card yanked for fraud, and yet he kept his job. And he's the guy running the elections. I'm really not kidding here.
He's a Rove operative now.
Oh, I would say, yeah, he's been one for quite a while.
So you're saying part of the strategy, the Rove strategy, is to find weak, corruptible county election board officials and
deal
with them.
Yes. Okay. We know he's got some.
All right. And what else? Now, you're an IT expert. You understand electronic voting machines. What do we need to look for in the key swing states? We have Republican secretaries of state and governors in Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, Iowa, New Mexico, and Arizona. So what are we going to be looking for in terms of electronic occurrences in those states?
Well, one of the things that local activists should be doing is doing public records requests for the key audit logs from the voting machines right after the election. We've seen cases where there's a three-hour chunk of the audit log missing on election night. That would be Washington State, Seattle, King County in 2004. There was a critical governor's race.
Yes, I remember that. Very, very close. And the Democrat wound up winning there, I think, by less than 1,000 votes. It was very close to that.
Yeah, it was a completely ridiculous race, but the upshot was there's a three-hour chunk of the audit log missing. So definitely there was fraud and tampering going on. And by the way, the election official who was running that King County operation then is now running Los Angeles County, the single most populous, voter-dense county in America.
Yeah, it's like 4 or 5 million people in that county.
Yeah, yeah. Is being run...
4 or 5 million voters, rather.
Yeah, is being run by a known...
Rove operative.
Well, I'm not ready to say Rove operative, but definitely not a guy of integrity you want running your elections. And we know that from his experience in King County.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got bad guys in key places. Now, in a lot of these areas, the election official who runs the election is not elected. He's appointed by people above him. So in some cases, they will know of second and third tier people in an election office who are ready to get hired and move up to run an election in some other county. And Rove's people, including R. Doug Lewis, having trained not just the top guy, but the second and third and fourth tier guys, he'll know which up-and-coming corrupted people are available to get hired in key counties by corrupt members of Board of Supervisors,
and
county managers.
This is the kind of hand-to-hand combat that Karl Rove excels in.
Yes, yes.
And does he have an identifiable organization that's working to do this? Or no? Okay.
Now, it's all under the table.
It's all under the table. So then the question becomes, what means shall we look for? And what sort of patterns should we watch for to see the subversion of the electronic vote count?
I have found a lot of success in looking at the audit logs and looking at a document called a Windows System Event Log. Windows System Event Log off of the Central Tabulator.
Okay.
And the audit log off of the Central Tabulator. And doesn't all of these systems, whether we're talking ESNS, Hart, Diebold, now Dominion, all of them.
Now,
run.
These are the three major machines.
Those are major ones.
Hardener Civic, Diebold, and ESNS. Is there Sequoia is out there too?
Well,
though, yeah?
Sequoia and Diebold have both been swallowed by Dominion.
Dominion. All right.
Okay?
So these are the only three players, basically.
No, there's other smaller players, but all these guys run Microsoft Windows at the central tabulator. Well, there's a document called the Windows Event Log. Mm-hmm. You should make a public records request for. And
in every state?
In every county. In every
county,
election jurisdiction.
In the country.
Yeah.
So can we prepare that? Can that be done prior to the election?
Well,
can the groundwork be laid so that there maybe some of these logs can be prevented from being destroyed?
I'm going to be honest with you, okay? A black box organization I work with very closely, a member of the board of directors, we publish information on this every year. Our problem is that election protection funding is extremely cyclical. The people with the big money expect to be able to pay a bunch of money 2 or 3 months before the election and hope things get protected. And then the day after the election, all the interest dies out. We've seen that. I've been working this issue since 2003. So 2004, 2006, okay. 2008, the same thing. Now, here's my problem. Most of the election protection crew that I worked with back in 2003, 4, 5 era have faded from the woodwork. They don't have the money to keep going and do this on a regular basis. There's entire networks of election protection people. For example, there was an entire crew that I knew in Austin, Texas, that have faded from the woodwork. They've all just gone their separate ways.
So what do we have to protect ourselves here? Is there an organization?
Precious little.
Is there an organization capable of filing these information requests on a national basis?
Jill and Bob Fitrakis and others are in the process of building it, and that's what needs to happen. I'll let Jill mention.
Well, let's talk about it. Richard Charner, are you still on the line?
Yes, I am.
Let's let Jill have a word. We're really running out of time here, but Jill, give a couple words, and Richard Charner, if you'll pipe in after.
Okay, what we did is we have formed an NGO, and it's called the Election Protection Action Organization. And basically what it's going to do is focus on several things. One, it's going to focus on the people that are involved in Karl Rove's empire. And I've helped a lot with that recently as far as pointing out sites that people did not know about, like Hank Asher, and then also like R. Doug Lewis, and explaining. When Jim was talking, when you asked Jim the question a minute ago about is there organizations looking at this. Well, Karl Rove is looking at every poll worker in the country because his old boss, R. Doug Lewis in Texas, is training all of the election workers.
Is this a federal contract that he has?
No. What's so sad about it is he is a self-designated private NGO who has convinced these people just to pay him a gazillion dollars to get out there and train election workers. That ought not be allowed in their country.
Well, who under whose auspices are these people being trained?
His own.
So he's not working for the government?
No. And aside from, let me tell you what else he did. And luckily, Jim's bunch called him along with Bev Harris at Black Box Voting and put a stop to it prior and talking to Bev this week about it because I just wanted to know a little bit more about it. Prior to EAC, which is the Election Assistance Commission, he was also certifying himself in Houston, Texas, in a junky little building behind a strip mall. He was certifying all of the voting machines as being accurate and adequate when he had been the head of the Republican Party for the executive director and the finance guy. I mean, it's just disgusting that an individual could certify election machines and train all the election workers. Bev stopped that by basically filing a lawsuit that stopped him from certifying the machines as a private individual.
Wow, that's killer. We're down to 2 minutes. All Richard Charnon, can I give me 30 seconds on what you're up to, and then we can give it over back to Bob Shakers and Lori Grace, who came back in the studio.
Okay. I guess what I'd like people to do is go to my blog and look at my daily model, and let's see if what the trend is going to be. I think we're going to know on a daily basis by before the election. I'll be very confident to say what looks like is going to take place.
And that's richardcharnon.com. Is that what it is?
Yeah, richardcharnon.com, and it links to my blog. The first post on the blog is the model, which I update every day for new prices. I'm sorry, new polls.
Okay, thank you. Thank you to Richard Charner. We'll check out your blog. Bob Fitrakis, publisher of the freepress.org. We have broken some of the major stories here. The story of Mitt Romney owning the a chunk directly, actually, of the voting machines. What's the next step for people to protect this election?
Well, I think there's a lot of stuff they can do. Number one, write Eric Holder. What we really need to do is get... I mean, the FBI is coming to Ohio to look for voter intimidation. I think they need to look for cyber theft, you know, just like any other white-collar criminals and racketeers. They need to do that. Also, people need to volunteer. In Ohio, we need really to stop a man-in-the-middle attack. We got to go to some major counties and some select rural counties and get every single shot of the precinct results that are posted, and we got to get them entered into a data bank. So when the numbers start looking real funny in the wee hours of the morning, we'll, for example, in 2004, you know, I got a PhD in stats. I'm not sure I needed it. My first sign was 100% of the vote was in Miami County.
Okay, we're almost out of time.
100% of the vote was in, and then 19,000 more votes came in, so I'm not sure what percent that was.
Lori Grace, you want to say a sign off here and tell the people in California to do what they need to do?
Once again, I just want to encourage you, those of you who are in California and who care about health, of which I know many of you are right here on this in this listening audience, is to go to democracyandelectionintegrity.org for instructions and to vote yes, you know, on a paper ballot Prop 37.
All right. We have had an astonishing 2 hours here. We're going to keep going. It's been another Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. Next week we will do another one. Until the election is over, this has been Harvey Wasserman from Solartopia. We'll see you next week on the radio.
We got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.